Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is New Comics Wednesday for March 28th, 2018. I think I have six books to talk about. Let me double check that. Yeah, six books I'm going to talk about, but it's actually a very, very good Wednesday. There's a great many good titles coming out tomorrow. A ton of stuff from DC. We've got a big event kicking off from Boom. We've got Shadow Man number one from Valiant, so it's definitely a big week. And talk about a few of the books, and then I'll do a rundown on a few other titles that I really think you should be paying attention to. All right, let's kick it off with Rough Riders Ride or Die number two from Aftershock Comics, written by Adam Glass, and the art is by Patrick Olaf, with colors by Gabe Eltiab. So this is the third volume in the Rough Rider story, and it's really tending to be more toward the supernatural. We saw in issue one, basically zombies, if you will, and something very bad, very evil, very graphic took place at a seance. And so we're seeing kind of the fallout of that. And in this second issue, a lot of what we saw in issue one is explained. And the other thing that happened at the end of issue one was Theodore Roosevelt and Harry Houdini went and recruited H.P. Lovecraft. And so in this volume, we find out why that took place, actually. So this was a good issue. As I said, it answered a lot of the questions for that were posed in issue one, kind of understand what the Rough Riders are up against now, and how they're going to fix it is something that's an entirely different story. We have no idea exactly how they're going to fix it, but I imagine that the resolution of this, or these demons that have kind of invaded our Earth, it's going to have to do with H.P. Lovecraft and what we find out about him on the last page of issue two. The other thing I'll say about issue two, for some reason, the art doesn't look as clean to me as it normally does from Patrick Olaf. So I'm not sure if he's doing something different. It wasn't as sharp as it normally is. So that was kind of strange. It looked a little distracting to the point where I even went and double checked. I was like, wait, is this still Patrick Olaf? And it is. So I don't know. Maybe he's just trying something different. And real quick, for those of you that aren't familiar with Rough Riders at all, basically what it is, it's kind of an alternate history. And it's a reimagining of Theodore Roosevelt's Rough Riders as kind of like the Justice League of their time, if you will. So the Rough Riders consist of Theodore Roosevelt, Thomas Edison, Jack Johnson, who was the first African-American heavyweight champion, Annie Oakley. We have Harry Houdini and I can't remember what Monk's last name is, but there's a gangster. Goes by the name of Monk, very famous back in the late 1800s. Let me see if I can find it. I'm drawing a total blank on his last name. Sorry about that. But basically, there it is, Monk Eastman. That's it. Yeah, career criminal. So they basically team up. They're recruited by Theodore Roosevelt in the first volume, and they team up to kind of take on threats that are really ahead of their time, so to speak. So I won't say more than that because I don't want to spoil if you haven't read volume one or volume two. Definitely recommend them, especially volume two. It's been my favorite volume so far. So Rough Riders 2, Ride or Die from Aftershock. All right, next up is another Aftershock title. It's Jimmy's Bastards number 7, written by Garth Ennis with art by Russ Braun. Colors are by John Kalis. And this was an interesting issue. It didn't really move the story forward a whole heck of a lot. And the premise of Jimmy's Bastards is that there's a James Bond type character but completely over the top in a way that only Garth Ennis can do. So the womanizing, the drinking, the skill with which he foils these insane plots from these bad guys, everything is cranked up to an 11. It's really, really fun. But it turns out that all that playing around, we'll call it, over the years, he's left many, many offspring. And they're not, how can I put this? They're not on his side, so to speak. They've kind of come together to try to take him down, to take down the famous and infamous Jimmy Regent, agent of MI6. So something happens at the end of issue 7 that kind of takes Jimmy off the board, so to speak. And so this issue is about him trying to right his wrongs, so to speak, and find it within himself to pick himself up again. But in a way that only Garth Ennis can portray. I have to say, though, I don't know that I like this new, more sensitive Jimmy Regent. I mean, as much as he was two-dimensional in the first 5 issues, let's say, and completely devil-may-care, that's kind of what made him fun, you know? It was a caricature, you know, satire, a reimagining of this James Bond-type character. But he Ennis took it so far, you know, past the line that it moved beyond cliche and was wildly entertaining. Now I'm seeing this more human, this more real side of Jimmy. That's not really what I signed up for. So I'm hoping with the resolution of the story that we'll see Jimmy kind of return to form. But at the same time, if this is meant to be a finite series, because I don't know. I mean, most of Aftershock titles have been on the shorter side, you know, 4 to 8, 12 issues maybe. So if that's the case and we need to see character growth and leave Jimmy in a better spot, I'd be okay with that. But if it's going to continue to be ongoing, I definitely want the return of the over-the-top Jimmy Regent. Now, that being said, his partner really shows off her skills in this issue, and that was a lot of fun. And the art by Russ Braun is second to none. No one else can draw this book. His rendering, his panel layouts, his facial expressions, the action scenes, all of it are just pitch perfect. He gets the tone and the feel that Ennis is going for perfectly. So it's not for the faint of heart, and it's definitely not for children. It's definitely for mature readers. A lot of sexual themes going on and a lot of harsh language. So, but if you enjoy previous things from Ennis like Cross or The Boys, I definitely would give this a try. It's one of my favorite Aftershock titles coming out right now for sure. All right, next up we have the conclusion of Dark Knight's Metal from DC. The creative team on this one, it's written by Scott Snyder, got pencils by Greg Capullo, inks by Jonathan Glapion, and I believe the colors on this one are by FCO Placencia. Yeah, that's right. So this is really, it's like a 48-page giant. It's double size, and it wraps up everything that's been going on in Metal, sort of. And I don't mean to say that you're going to be left disappointed. I wasn't. I actually feel, and Manny, we both of us read this Saturday night while we were at WonderCon, and both of us weren't disappointed at all. We felt like it was a good conclusion to the series. It wraps up everything from Dark Knight's Metal. There's no dangling plot threads other than the ones that are meant to be. And by that, I mean that the resolution of the story, you know, solves the issues that were going on, the challenge, the, you know, bat god of Barbados, and it answers everything and everything is resolved. But as a result of that resolution, other things happen that then open up new avenues for new stories, which is going to lead into the weekly event that's coming up. I think it's next month, actually. Justice League No Justice from Joshua Williamson and Scott Snyder And that is then going to lead into the new Justice League title written by Scott Snyder, the Justice League Dark title written by James Tynan, and the Justice League Odyssey title. I think that one's going to be written by Joshua Williamson, but I'm not 100% on that. I should remember because, you know, I was there and I've talked about it on the podcast in the past couple episodes, but my brain is a little fried, as you can imagine. Let me just look it up really quick. But as far as Dark Knight's Metal number 6 goes, I really enjoyed it. It had some, Joshua Williamson's going to be on the writer on Justice League Odyssey with Stefan Sedgwick art. So that's going to be really, really great. But getting back to Dark Knight Metal 6, there were some interesting moments. I found the end to be very satisfying. You know, I didn't care so much about the final confrontation with the Batman Who Laughs Last. That was kind of like whatever to me. Same with the final confrontation with Barbados. Again, I was kind of like, eh, whatever. But the way that the heroes come together to resolve the issues with existence and with Earth, that was awesome. That's what mattered to me. That's what kind of was like, yes, Scott Snyder definitely gets it. He understands who the Justice League are, and that was great. And it has me really excited for his Justice League run, much more so than for his Batman run. And I've gone on record saying that it's not that I dislike his run on Batman at all. I said right from the start when I heard Tom King was on Batman that I would probably enjoy it more, and that's been the case. And again, it's not that I – no disrespect to Scott Snyder. I think he's an incredible writer. It's just his take on Batman is not the way that I see Batman. You know, and it's no knock on him, whatever, you know, his Batman is always kind of locked in eternal combat with Joker. The Joker is so inherent into who Scott Snyder's Batman is and really informs Scott Snyder's Batman. And any longtime listener to the podcast will tell you that the Joker is definitely not my favorite. I, if he never appeared in another comic for the rest of time, I would be fine with that. I just don't like him as a character. And so I'm enjoying Tom King's run on Batman more for those reasons. But man, the epilogue in this, again, it was right in line with what Snyder's resolution was with the League. And it opens up and explains probably everything that's going on with the DC Universe in the next couple years, it looks like. With the exception of what Geoff Johns is doing in Doomsday Clock. But it was really great. It does make me wonder, though, how much of this Snyder knew ahead of time and how much was kind of put in place after. Because the epilogue is drawn by Mikhail Yanin rather than Greg Capullo, which is fine. I love Mikhail Yanin's art. But it just makes me wonder. It's like, okay, did they add this in after? Like, you know, halfway through Metal, did they just figure out what they were doing and what they wanted to have happen after? Or was it already completely planned out? That would be interesting. I don't know that I could ever get an answer to that question. I don't know if, I mean, Scott might tell me off the record, but anyway, if you want to know what's going to be going on in the DC Universe coming up for the next at least year, you definitely need to pick up this issue. Even if you haven't been reading Metal at all, you can pick up this issue and you won't completely understand why things are the way they are, but you would know enough. And with the epilogue, you could just read the epilogue by itself without the story and just think of it as like, okay, the epilogue starts with the fact that the Justice League just defeated a huge threat and it kind of changed status quo going forward. And here's what the DC Universe is going to look like. Here's all the new initiatives that are going on, the Sandman Universe, the Justice League, No Justice, the different Justice Leagues, Justice League, Justice League Dark, Justice League Odyssey. It's all explained here in the epilogue. So it was completely amazing. I loved the issue, loved the wrap-up. As far as Metal itself, again, like I said, I could do with it. It wasn't that I could do without. I shouldn't say it that way, but The final confrontation with Batman Who Laughs and the final confrontation with Barbados wasn't what most excited me about the issue. As I said, it was the League coming together and these heroes showing that they're really a family. That was what I enjoyed. As far as the pacing, I feel like all along, DC Metal has, Dark Knight's Metal has suffered from a pacing problem. And it's just because the ideas that Snyder's exploring are so big. I just don't think that there's enough room to really explore them as much as they need to be explored. And so sometimes the story can come across a little choppy, because it almost feels like you're missing pieces of it. That being said, I don't really think you could have stretched this out any further. I mean, it feels like these days with the way entertainment is, you know, instant and people binge watch, you know, entire seasons of TV shows, it's hard to do something that's a, you know, a 12 issue like Crisis on Infinite Earths, because that's really, you know, Crisis, this is a Crisis level event, Dark Knight's Metal, completely. And so doing it as 12 issues would have been better, but at the same time, you're tying everything else up for a year, and it's harder to do nowadays than when the actual Crisis came out or Marvel's Superhero Secret Wars came out. The other issue is, you know, art is more intricate now, and it takes a little longer, and so it'd be tougher to have Capullo have done it all. I mean, just look at what DC had to do with Doomsday Clock, right? That's now on a bi-monthly schedule. That means for the 12-issue Doomsday Clock series, you're looking at like almost 2 years to get the whole story to come out. So that's a long time to ask people to wait. And so I feel like that's why they try to get the big event over a little quicker now, especially because there are delays inevitably. And this was no exception. Dark Knight's Metal did have at least one skip month. I'm not sure if there was more than one. So anyway, it's a good resolution, a good story. I look forward to reading it like all together from beginning to end. I think I may notice the pacing issue. The pacing issues may bother me a little less when I read it that way. So it's definitely an issue I recommend, though. If you're only going to read one issue of Dark Knight's Metal, definitely make it number 6, the resolution, because as I said, it sets up the DC Universe going forward. All right, the next book I'm going to talk about is Mira, Queen of Atlantis, number 2. This is written by written by Dan Abnett, with pencils by Lan Medina, inks by Norm Ratman, and colors by Veronica Gandini. I'll talk about the art first. Lan Medina's art is stunningly good for Mira. She looks sufficiently capable. She's not like overly sexualized or anything like that. Like sometimes you see with some artist, she looks regal. She looks powerful. The art is clean. It's good lines. The storytelling, the panel layouts, everything about his art is very well suited for this book. Also the covers by Nicola Scott, are incredible. I love Nicola's art, always have. So, those are done very well. The story itself, I'm enjoying. I love that it's focused on Mira. Aquaman doesn't really make an appearance in this issue at all, except in a, kind of a dream. And it's the return of the Ocean Master, who we saw in issue 1. And he comes across very believable. I love what Abnett is doing with him, making him a more real and fleshed out character. Because he always tended to be a little more of the mustache-twirling villain previously, where he just, you know, he wanted to conquer the surface world just because he wanted to conquer the surface world. You know, he didn't really have, never really understood his motivation. He just came across as just very, wah-ha-ha-ha-ha, I'm evil. And so Abnett's really fleshing him out more, and I appreciate that. It's the fight between Mira and Ocean Master, again, very believable, and really, really enjoying this title. And I don't know that I can see the resolution yet. I'm just not sure what's going to happen, and I like that. So, again, it almost feels like, even though it's Mira, Queen of Atlantis, this just as easily could be called Ocean Master, and because he's been just as central of a character as Amira. So really enjoying this series, and I certainly recommend it. All right, next up we have G.I. Joe, Real American Hero, number 250. And this is kind of the end of the first chapter of the new Snake Eyes story. It's the Don Moreno who has taken over as Snake Eyes in the G.I. Joe universe. You know, the original Snake Eyes was killed. Don Moreno had his memories, if you will, downloaded into her brain accidentally by Cobra. You know, they're always kind of bumbling and inept. And in a way, they have created their greatest enemy, because Dawn is more than capable, and she really shows it in this issue. It's an interesting issue. It Larry Hama, I should go over the creative team. So it's written by Larry Hama, who, you know, legendary and very long run on G.I. Joe at this point. And I believe the art, there's a lot of different variant covers. And there were a couple of exclusive variant covers at WonderCon for this issue, and I meant to pick them up, and I totally spaced on it. But yeah, the art is by Nitho Diaz. The inks are also by Nitho Diaz with Allison Rodriguez and Tiago Gomez. And colors are by Milan Pravanov. Yep, Pravanov. So as I was saying, it's a really interesting choice that Hama has made to basically create this new young female Snake Eyes. And she's an interesting character, because with all the experience of Snake Eyes and the memory of the original Snake Eyes in her head, it's really given her wisdom beyond her years. And she's making good choices. She's a complete badass on the battlefield and in while she's fighting, you know, extremely knowledgeable. And, you know, the physical talents are all her own, you know, obviously enhanced with the knowledge and experience of the original Snake Eyes. But I feel like the wisdom and the choices she's making are so informed by the original Snake Eyes that it makes for a really interesting character. Plus, the other thing is she can talk. And as cool as we all thought Snake Eyes was growing up, you know, because he was kind of, you know, the strong silent type because he was a mute, maybe he didn't have as much impact as he could have. You know, I'm not saying he needed to talk a blue streak, but just giving us a window into his thoughts by dialogue may have made certain moments in the history of Snake Eyes more impactful. And we're getting that with Don Moreno. So I encourage you to pick it up. I think that the entire Don Moreno saga, I think it started like in issue 229, and this is kind of the culmination here in 250, has been handled really well. She's become a very, very popular character in a relatively short period of time. So the art from Diaz, you know, he's not my favorite artist on G.I. Joe. His stuff tends to be a little stiff for my taste. His rendering is fine, and his panel layouts, I don't have any problem with that. He's relatively traditional. He doesn't go too crazy on the page. And, you know, for splash pages, it's great. But there are just times when the angles he chooses, you know, where he chooses to put the camera, if you will, in my opinion, aren't the best. And things just look a little wonky sometimes. But this was a great issue. It was a lot of fun. As I said, it's so interesting to watch Moreno, Don Moreno, the new Snake Eyes, make the choices she's making. And you can't help but root for her. So I think G.I. Joe is a really underrated title coming out right now from G.I. Joe. All right, the last book I'm going to talk about is Shadow Man, number one, from Valiant Comics. And we actually had originally planned on talking about this for Valiant Sunday, but we decided to do a Live from WonderCon episode instead. Basically, because there's not a whole lot to say about Shadow Man, number one, based on the first issue. So let me give the creative rundown first. It's by Andy Diggle writing, and we have Steven Segovia on art and colors by Ulysses Ariola. So yeah, it wasn't that I disliked it. I just didn't really think that there was a whole heck of a lot going on here. And I didn't understand exactly how it tied in with the previous, because, you know, Shadow Man had been trapped in the Dead Side, but I thought in the Rapture series with Ninjak, he had already been rescued, but then we see him rescued from the Dead Side here. So I'm not 100% clear. I'll have to talk to some other Valiant experts and get their thoughts on it. But that was like a little thing, and I could even kind of overlook that. The biggest thing that bothered me actually had to do with the art. You know, Stephen Scobie is a really great artist, but I didn't think that this was his best work, like not even close. And I don't know if it's Araloa's coloring or what. It didn't look as impactful to me or as dynamic as Segovia's art usually looks. But the biggest problem I had with it is the way that Jack looks, Jack Boniface, Shadow Man. It's so wildly different from how he's looked at any time he's been drawn in the new Valiant that it just bothers me. His skin is much darker. He has like dreadlocks. I haven't seen him look like this at all. He looks like a totally different character. It really bugged me. I don't know why. I mean, it's not like I think he needs to be a white guy by no means. I always thought he was of mixed race, but here he looks completely African-American and his skin tone's way too dark. And the dreads, which I'd never, he's always had like longish hair, but certainly not dreads. It really bugged me. And as I said, as far as the story itself, there's not a lot to it. You know, he comes back from the Dead Side, supposedly has escaped, and it looks like Diggle is going to explore the history of Shadow Man and the Loa that Jack has within him, and we'll kind of get an understanding of why up to this point with this version of Shadow Man, Jack has had such a hard time controlling it, which has been an interesting aspect, almost like an Incredible Hulk-like aspect of the character, which I know hasn't sat well with a lot of the Valiant fans. So, you know, this is probably the one character that Valiant hasn't gotten right at all. But I mean, even that being said, if you go back and listen to Sunday's episode when Manny and I give our thoughts on the future of Valiant with the buyout by DMG, I know a lot of Valiant fans have felt like the quality is still there. I feel like the quality has slipped some. That's just me. I'm not as excited about Valiant books as I've been in the past. That's not to say there aren't some great titles coming out. Ninja K has been completely amazing, and so has Bloodshot. Everything else has been EXO's been pretty good as well. But things like Harbinger Renegades and certainly Archer and Armstrong have been less than stellar, we'll put it that way. And unfortunately, I think I'm going to have to put the first issue of Shadow Man in that less than stellar category as well. But it's early days. It's early times. It's only the first issue. So I'll certainly be in for the next issue to see where it goes from here. But there's also other opinions that I've heard recently from people that I trust that know more than me about where the story's going that also don't necessarily think that it's heading in the right direction. So I guess we'll have to wait and see. All right, that's going to do it for the kind of the in-depth books that I'm looking at. Let me do a quick rundown of other titles you might be interested in. From Aftershock, we have Animosity number 13, and we also have Unholy Grail trade paperback volume 1. That's from Cullen Bunn and Mirko Kolak. I think it was episode 247. We did a spotlight on that. And it's basically a reimagining of the legend of King Arthur, where Merlin is not on the side of the angels. I'll put it that way. So it's a really good story. I recommend you checking it out. I'll mention from Boom, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers number 25. This kicks off the Shattered Grid event, which is Boom has been promoting like crazy as this huge world-changing event for the Mighty Morphin Power Ranger universe. So if you're a Power Ranger fan, you definitely want to be in there to check this out. from writer Kyle Higgins. They released a really cool trailer, and they're really going all in on this. And as long as we're on the subject of Kyle Higgins, I encourage you all to go watch The Shadow Hours, which is his short film. It debuted at some film festivals over the last year, but it's finally available now for the general public. You can go to IGN.com to check it out. Just do a search there for The Shadow Hours. It's really cool. It's only like 18 minutes, I think, so it won't take too much time out of your day. And it's a really cool short film. And Kyle's trying to get it made into a feature-length film. And so the more buzz and the more eyes on it, the better. So do me a favor, personally, and do yourself a favor because it's good, and go and check it out. Next up, I'll mention from DC, in addition to Dark Knight's Metal 6 and Mira number 2, we've got Doomsday Clock number 4, which we're probably going to be doing a spotlight on Doomsday Clock soon. I don't think we've talked about it since issue 1 came out, which was like November or December of last year. We also have Mother Panic, Gotham AD number 1, which it's pretty good. And I don't think you necessarily need to have read the previous Mother Panic title. But that being said, you'll get a lot more out of it if you have. But Mother Panic is a very good character. Without question, my favorite of the Young Animal titles. And Jody Houser is doing a really, really great job. So I think it's flying a little bit under the radar. I encourage you all to go and check that out. Also, Mystic U number 3 is out. That finishes up that title about a university for the magic users in the DC universe. Zatanna, if you're a fan of Zatanna, you certainly want to check that out. It's a it's a very Zatanna-centric story, I'll put it that way. The Terrifics number 2 from Jeff Lemire and Yvonne Reese, Joe Prado, follows in the footsteps of issue 1, where we saw the heroes kind of come together as a team. And in this issue, we find out they're kind of stuck with each other, so to speak. So it was a heck of a lot of fun, great art. And I enjoyed it very, very much. I think that that's going to be a really great title. And of all the New Age of Heroes titles, I think that's the one that's going to have the most traction. And you know, we kind of knew that even at San Diego last year. It seemed to be the one during the panel that they were talking about, all these New Age of Heroes books. It seemed to be the one everybody was most excited about, and it hasn't disappointed. So I definitely recommend that. From IDW, in addition to the G.I. Joe title I mentioned, we have High House number 2, or Highest House, rather. I talked about issue 1 on the podcast a few weeks ago. Over at Image, we have Black Magic number 11. I think that wraps up volume 2 of Black Magic, and hoping to have Nicola on the podcast soon to talk about that. We've also got Cyberforce number 1 from Top Cow, which is kind of a reboot. Not really a reboot. It's a relaunch of the title, if you will, from writer Matt Hawkins. Also Hit Girl number 2, Saga 50. One other thing about Cyberforce, we will be covering that in tomorrow's episode for Top Cow Thursday this week. So stay tuned for more details on that, or tune in tomorrow, if you will. Marvel, we've got the Avengers No Surrender storyline continuing in Avengers 686. We've also got Daredevil 600 from Charles Soule. That's a milestone and a really great book that's been getting a lot of buzz lately. I mean, I think it's been incredible the whole time. And I think the fact that a lot of people wanted to see what exactly was going on with the Mayor Fisk storyline and the Landmark 600 issue, it's been picking up steam lately. And by all accounts, it hasn't disappointed readers. So I encourage you to check that out. And then from Valiant, in addition to the Shadow Man number 1, we've got Exo Man of War number 13. So a lot of good books out this week. Gonna hit our pocketbooks a little heavier than normal. At least mine will be impacted. So I encourage you to go to your local comic shop and pick up some of these books tomorrow. Let me know what you're reading. I always love to hear from fans. So that's going to do it for this episode of the podcast. Don't forget, you can go to thecomicsourceblog.com for all past episodes of the podcast, as well as lrmonline.com. And while you're at LRM Online, be sure to check out all the other coverage on movies and TV shows and all that good stuff. Twitter.com/thecomicsource is where you can find us on Twitter. Do a search on Facebook and Instagram for The Comic Source. That's where you can follow us on those social platforms. And we're always sure to update you whenever a new episode is released. And I think that's it. I don't think I have any other news for you guys right now. So that's going to do it. Thanks for joining me as always, and we'll talk to you next time.